Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the tree of life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
Your lighting designer should be paid.
He looked at the job.
Do you guys, that means you'd be paying Mother Nature or God. So I don't know.
Tracy trying to tell us that she's only using juices and berries.
I don't know how invoices come from Mother Nature. So I don't know how to do that.
Right. A month later, it's going to be a pattern skin line.
Yeah, I actually want to skip the intro. Are we ready to go?
I'm recording. It's recording right now.
All right. We're all recording.
Okay. I am recording right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all of the Team Supremers, say hello at the same time. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Yep. Okay. Hi. All right. Today's a day. No, you're not a Team Supremer, Ms.
Sorry. I was responding to the hellos. I was trained well.
You're not family yet. Hang on. Let us induct you.
That's
first.
I apologize.
Yeah. Today's a day of miracles. It's so miraculous. I don't even want to waste a nanosecond giving you good people our guest impressive resume. We can review her life at the same time, you know, as a group. And I'm not even being dramatic because I'm afraid she's going to disappear.
True. Word.
So blah, 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 blah. Lyricist Lounge, blah, blah, blah,
yes.
blah, blah. Girlfriends,
yes.
Iconic parents, blah, 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 blah. Siblings, everybody.
Yeah, yes. High note, blah, 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 blah. Blah.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Tracy Ellis Ross to Questlove Supreme. How did this moment happen?
Blah, 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 blah.
I just want to say, Tracy, I've never stalked a person that I actually know.
3 years.
I've never stalked a person I consider a friend. Like, be one thing when I creep in Rihanna's DMs. Like, we don't have a relationship like that. But I've been slowly poaching you, bit by bit. Like, I would do like tiny comments on all your social media to be like, oh, Amir, let me follow him. Then I'd jump in your DMs and try and get, and that would never happen. So I don't know how this moment. Just know that.
Wait, you have to, that is ridiculous. Because by the way. The moment I finally saw your DM.
3 years later,
but I saw it and I was like, what do you mean you've been trying to get? I'm like, what are you talking about? Of course I'll do that.
Look, I want to let all polite stalkers know, and I say this.
You ain't going to get to me.
Really, I'd let that just a little bit at a time, persistence does work, but you know, mm-hmm. I had to stalk mm-hmm. you to get here. Mm-hmm. How are you today, Trace?
I'm really, really good today. I am back from Cabo and my first sort of foray away. It's been a long time since I've had a break. This pandemic, like for everybody, was just really challenging. And I also didn't stop through the whole thing. I had a movie that came out right at the beginning of the pandemic, at the beginning of lockdown, a week after George Floyd's murder. And it just has not stopped. So
How hard was it being like business as usual?
There was no business as usual. And it was a weird, you know, leading up to the launch of the movie. I mean, I was so excited. It was the first time I sang. Like, it was such a big moment for me. I walked through one of my biggest fears of my life. Like, just, it was so exciting. And then they're like, we're not going to have a premiere. I'm like, I'm sorry, what now? You know, so that was the first like disappointment, and also like, you know, small disappointment considering the many disappointments everyone was having and the genuine grief and loss that was occurring, but a personal disappointment nonetheless. People had to, you know, reschedule weddings and couldn't be there with holding people's hands. So that was the first thing. And then it was like, who cares? It just felt so, it was like, who cares? And then it flipped back around to, yes, because our freedom and our joy and our reveling in who we are is an important form of resistance in response to the systemic oppression and the violence and the death. And so it's just, you know, like for everybody, we've been whirling around with so much in our hearts and heads through this time.
Right.
I mean, that's a heavy how am I, but
but it was honest.
How the show is.
It was honest.
But wait, I will say probably the glass half full answer is also, I probably think that more people saw the high note in the way that we saw it, because you know, there was just a period where television and movies was just all of our escape. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
And so
it was one of the first movies to do the whole straight to
it was the right. Second.
Yeah. No, I definitely remember like
genuinely, they didn't even know how to price it. Like that's how mm-hmm. new it was. Like no one knew what to, I didn't even know what VOD meant. Do you know what I mean? Like it right. was just, no one understood any of that at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. The weekend that you guys in Palm Springs came out, that was like a happy weekend in the household where we just, you didn't know if you were coming or going or if we would be here next week or not here, you know, just.
Yeah.
So I definitely remember like just those first 2 months where just any new cinema content was like relief.
It's so funny. I didn't watch any TV. Screens were not my thing. I was reading at the beginning, reading and cooking. And listening to audiobooks. Like I couldn't find the right content that mm-hmm. made me feel okay. And right. so I was going back to old books I'd already read.
Like, what did you read?
The Bluest Eye is one of my favorite audiobooks wow. because it's read by Ruby D. Antoni. It's
wow.
It's literally like going to the theater.
Ordering that now.
Incredible. Incredible. Okay. So I listened to that. I went back to all the old David Sedaris books because they just made me laugh and sort of took me completely out of what we were in. And so I would cook and listen to audiobooks. And then I slowly crept myself back to television. And, you know, I remember watching The Tiger King and thinking, I'm not sure that this is a very soothing balm. Like, I don't know that my soul is going, this is what I needed. Like, I really? Was like, I'm not sure what's happening here. This is very much to take in. His outfits were intense.
Was Tiger King the lowest? I'll say probably for me was Selling Sunset was the lowest that I went as far as like.
What? You wait. Can I just tell you something? Selling Sunset was definitely lower and I actually watched it too. And then I caught myself at a certain point and I was like, oh, this, I've got to stop this. I can't.
Right. And then you're watching all three seasons and like,
oh,
I did not watch all three seasons here. You can go down with that one. Friend, that was not me.
No, let me preface a friend. Like I'm at 30 Rock. So a friend of mine at Saturday Night Live was doing a Selling Sunset spoof for the show. And I didn't know none of the references. I was like, all right, let me watch one episode. And then that's how I got trapped.
Yeah.
And then started just watching.
I still have not watched an episode of The Kardashians.
Ever in your whole life?
No, I...
Wait, really? Really? None of y'all?
No. Really? No.
I really haven't.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm giving her the biggest side eye right
come
now.
Come on.
I really haven't. First of all, you do get enough of the snippets on Instagram. They'll come through.
Right.
I tried to watch this. Was it the first episode of this? Is this the final? This is the final season, right?
Allegedly, so I'm not supposed to know that, but yeah, that's what they say. You know, that's what I heard.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I saw a piece of it, and I was watching, and I was like, "This is just not for me." You know, it's just not. This is just, the same thing happens when I open TikTok. I go, "Oh, I don't." Oh. Ooh. I don't know what's happening. Oh God. I
Wait, you're not on TikTok?
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
I am
to that.
Totally on TikTok, but when I open that app. Yeah, I was about to say,
you seem like the prime candidate for it.
Yeah, my content can go on there, but when I open that app, I feel like I'm being assaulted. Yeah.
It's like a panic attack as an app.
It's crazy. And I feel like it's not meant for my generation. I was like, that's okay.
When do we start admitting these things? I'm so ready for that. I'm so
right
ready
now.
To start admitting.
Right now. Yeah.
Proud of my age. I have earned every stripe, every wrinkle, every cellulite, every droop, all of it. I've earned it all. And I'm happy to say, no, that's not for me. I'm good.
I will say that as a person that lives in a hotel room, like I'm a lazy Kardashian. Like I don't actively look for like the new episode, but on Sundays, the E Network will do that 8-hour marathon.
That's what I was thinking, Amir. Yeah.
And I just get lazy and I just, sometimes I like a good aquarium to be in my room. Before my girlfriend moved in, like I lived alone for the longest and you just have TV running on in the background.
Oh, I know.
Normally my aquarium was my Soul Train episodes, but now.
Please don't say it's the Kardashians. Don't say that.
No, it's so
I'm just
funny.
Saying that if it's on, I don't turn it off. I don't actively watch it, but I also don't turn it off. So.
And by the way, I'm not hating. As I said, it's just not for me. Do you know what I mean?
No,
I'm not hating on that. I personally.
Other people have said worse. This is the most diplomatic way to.
Yeah.
It's totally quiet for me in my home and in my life. Like I listen to music. But I don't have a soundtrack that's always going or a TV, not at all.
Tracy, do you get overwhelmed by the music like you do by everything else? Because I don't know about you, but
I mean, I talk for a living. And so like at a certain point, I'm just like, enough, like shut it down. And I do like when I'm packing or I need background information, because I always get anxiety when I'm packing to go somewhere. It's such an ordeal. It's such an ordeal. And I'm such an overpacker. And it's like, I've let go of all the shame about the overpack. It just is what it is. My friends find it hilarious and so annoying. But while I'm packing, I like to listen to stand-up comedy.
We're the same person. We are the same person.
I love
person.
It. Who are you listening to?
Me?
Well, yes. Her. I would like to know what both of you are listening to, boss. Sure.
Well, let me tell you about myself, Laia.
Okay, good.
I'm an Aquarian, and I like Nate Borghazzi. Thank you.
He's funny.
I just watched Raw again.
Oh, wow.
I just watched Richard Pryor when he's in the red satin shirt, and I'm like, dude, that shirt went from satin to velvet. He was so sweaty.
His sweat.
It's like sunset, right? Laughing with sunset.
I swear to God, like it went into like a sunset, and then all of a sudden it looked velvet.
Wait, have I ever admitted on the show that
probably
Eddie's comedy never hit me?
Oh,
no.
I don't know. I don't think you said that, Mr. Some supposed to be black person.
But let's get into it.
Let's talk anti-black about it. Because... No,
I never heard one say that.
I wasn't allowed to watch it as a kid, and so when I got it I got Raw when I was on the tour bus, and I only knew the stuff based on what my friends did in high school. Like I knew the ice cream joke and all that stuff, but watching Raw and Delirious for the first time, like as a 20-year-old on the tour bus, like I wasn't on the floor like I was with Chris Rock or watching Chappelle.
Interesting.
It's one of those you had to be there moments, and then
very like an 80s
like
horror
I felt like
movie.
A millennial watching Public Enemy right now. Like,
but let me ask you a question though: when you watch Richard Pryor, does it hit you?
I snuck Richard Pryor. Like my dad had those records, and I'd sneak and listen to those records. He didn't bring Eddie Murphy in the house, so we didn't have cable. Like,
oh, so you saying you didn't hear it in its time because you heard it?
Right.
Okay, I got you.
I don't know, Amir. I think I don't know that it has to. Oh. I mean, look, I don't know. I'm not your therapist, but I don't know if it has to do with what you heard as a kid, because I didn't hear Eddie Murphy or Richard Pryor as a kid.
Right.
And but that sensibility, particularly Richard Pryor and his storytelling ability, I can't get over it. Like it, I would be packing and I would stop and just be like,
the crafting, and it's not even crafting, it's just the way his mind works, right? Like it just blew my mind the way he would come back around. You know, there's some comedians I watch and I think, there was more to that joke. Like, you didn't quite get the rest out of that. like the backseat driver who can say like what the comedian, like he's on Netflix, like clearly he's doing just fine. I don't think he needs Tracy's commentary, but that's the beauty of watching it in your home. You can do all that, but I will admit, I don't know if I'm going to admit what I was going to change my mind.
Go ahead.
Let it fly.
Safe space.
Oh, bull crap. No,
it is a safe. I don't know about out there, but right here, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
No, there is someone who, if people are shocked that I do not have on in any of my music playlists, and is just not someone I listen to. I did growing up, but it hasn't lasted for me.
Ooh, got it. You hate Thriller. I got it.
No.
Anyway.
No, it's Prince. I knew that was next.
Uh-oh.
Maybe dude, this isn't a safe space after all.
Prince is a niche. I get it. Prince is a niche artist. And so
a very specific. It's interesting because I remember when Darling Nikki came out, I would hide on the backside of my bed on the floor with the tape cassette thing opened up to look at the lyrics. Mm-hmm. And I learned that song and was like, this is fascinating. I was like, what is all this he speaks of?
Right.
Was that something that you would have gotten in trouble and you would have got caught for if that age?
Probably. I mean, my mom is anti-violence and pro-sex. Like, she didn't have issue with love and sex and us seeing that. But violence, like the Flintstones, she had issue with because of the violence in that. Like, they're violence. Yeah, seriously. And the way he treated his wife was not great.
Fred, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I don't think that song was really intense, no?
Mm-hmm. It was.
Yeah. I didn't know how old you were, so I'm
still
like.
Still is.
And what year did that song come out?
84.
84.
I was born in 72. I was 12. I mean, 12, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a period where like a lot of black families became super Christian conservative, like between 79 and 88. So I caught hell like
baby boomers.
Yeah. I mean, well, the thing is, they did all the sinning as 20-year-olds in the 60s and all the hedonistic shit in the 70s. And then they had to atone for their sin when they returned in 40. So, yeah, I'm just saying, like, I missed. I got on punishment for Prince, but for everything else, like, they were on my ass as far as like making sure that I didn't see it, even though like I had cousins and whatnot. So that's.
But
what
let
I
me
mean
ask by, you a question: were my 40s supposed to be atoning for my sins?
No, our 40s were different than their 40s.
Okay,
but the thing is also, I'll say that the silver lining of what we just went through this year was that we have absolutely no doubt whatsoever that the idea of the moral right majority is absolutely full of shit. Like, we have proof now.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that everyone was hanging on. Like, they actually believed in, like, you know, Christian values and family values and all these things and cleanliness and all that, you know.
Drinking milk.
Right. No, thank you. I do believe in cleanliness, though. I like that.
But I'm just saying that in terms of what the moral right has led us to think was, you know, American moral right values, in which obviously in the last 4 years of what we went through has been absolutely proven that it's bullshit. Like, there really isn't a moral right. It's just hiding behind the shield of Christianity
and racism.
Right, exactly.
Well, yeah. I mean, morality is a tough one. I think values are very different, but morality has a fundamentalism to it that gets really complicated because somebody gets to decide what's right and wrong. There is a baseline, you know, on those things, but it starts to get really complicated. I think that the moral right, so to speak, is a different term and has been used to sort of cloak racism, sexism, et cetera. But
I think it's going to be a long time before we get somebody that can pull what Reagan pulled in terms of like really getting people to turn around and at least for black people, because, you know, people, younger people are shocked when I tell them like everyone my parents' age were like Republicans because they thought like, you know, Republicans are closer to Christianity and abortion is wrong. And so, you know, yeah, like people were really shocked that blacks were as conservative as they were. I doubt that it'll happen again. So, yes, to answer your question, yeah, I don't think 40 and 50-year-old people have anything to worry about as far as
No, I'm not atoning. I'm trying to get as free as I can. Listen. I'm a liberated woman.
Listen.
Out into the world.
Hey, man. Talk your shit.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonte, Fontigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be black today, told from a unique black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at Airbnb.com/host.
In the 1980s, Frank Farian was riding high as a successful German music producer, but he was bored.
German pop was formulaic, dull, and oh so white. Frank had bigger dreams, American dreams. He wanted to create the kind of music that would rival larger-than-life artists like Michael Jackson or Run DMC.
So he assembled a hip-hop duo, two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? One very important element was missing, but Frank knew just how to fix that.
Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's biggest controversies. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when their adoring fans learned about the infamous lip-syncing, their downfall was swift and brutal. With exclusive interviews from frontman Fab Morvan and his producers Frank Farian and Ingrid Segui, this podcast takes a fresh look at the exploitation of two young black artists.
Follow Blame It on the Fame wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus.
Okay, I have to ask you, obviously, and I was wondering, should I even burden you about, like, the first 10 years of your life? But only because of my personal curiosity, I'll say that, you know, I think I told you the story before that instead of, like, reading me books, my parents would just put records on, and that would be my, what do you call it, my lullaby. And so they would often play your mom's live records, her two live records at Caesars in Vegas.
Oh.
As my, that was like my lullaby, you know, whatever. And so they'd always put on side two where she would tell the stories of Rhonda, Tracy, and Chutney, which I guess to like 5-year old me, you all were just like one 3-headed monster. So, but she would always talk
it's
about
so
you guys.
Crazy. You're not the only one. I can't remember who else. Tarana Burke. She's always like, Rhonda Tracy Chudney, Rhonda Tracy Chudney.
Right, right. I just knew you guys. Like, I was like, oh, they're my friends. Because she always talked about you three, like, when she went on Dinah Shore and when she went, like, the average, like, the talk show circuit, she would just talk about her children, but it was, like, always one name. So I guess my question is, like, at what point does it register to you that you're not in an average situation as far as your childhood is concerned? Not to mention your dad is, like, a super manager of, like, mm-hmm. Rufus and Chaka Khan and Billy Preston and Franklin Ajayi and all these other groups. Your father, Bob Ellis, who I just, that's, it never occurred to me that the Ellis in your name was the Bob Ellis.
And let me tell you why I put that in my name. I have like three things to say of what you said. So I want to answer your question, but I also want to say whatever we were texting about, you mentioned the name of a group from my dad that which he managed, that was like an offshoot of some other group where they were back. I don't know. But when I mentioned it to him, because I read him the text.
Right.
He, first of all, my dad has the best stories, but he went on this whole long tangent about this group, and we thought they were going to be the ones. I don't know. He had this whole story, and I was like, "Dad, I have no idea who you're talking about."
Like, I'm not going to remember.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Okay, but.
By the way, Laia, we only got Tracy on the show so we can get to Bob.
Oh, okay, good.
Listen.
You're just a bridge right now, Tracy.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Yes, I have a legendary picture of him myself that I'm saving for later. But please don't forget your points, Tracy, because I'm
going to get that. Okay, so to answer your question about when did it sort of dawn on me, did I realize who my mom was?
Right.
In the context of life, and that it was not, I wasn't having the most ordinary experience of being a child. So a couple of things to set the stage. My mom is a mom before she's the Diana Ross lady.
Right.
So who the sort of extraordinariness of Diana Ross does not hold a candle to who she is as a mom. Like, she's really great as Diana Ross, but like, she's like exponentially great as a mom. Mm. So we always came first. So she recorded at night while she would put us in bed, get us to sleep. Then she would leave and go to the recording studio, get home, wake us up for school, and then go back to sleep. She never left for longer than a week when we were in school. So, and when she was gone, she would call us at dinner time or bedtime and in the morning. So the sense of home and normalcy that I grew up in was home and normal. I wasn't carted all over the world in some crazy way. And then on the summers, we would go, she would rent a home somewhere and have a home base. So she would rent a home in London. We would live there. She would charter out every night to go fly to her gigs. I call them gigs still. It's really funny. She would fly to her shows and then come back. So the sense of normalcy that I had, it wasn't like I was, you know, I was going to school. I was doing all the regular things. The other piece of it is that I went to Dalton growing up, and I went to school with Robert Redford's kids, the Ralph Lauren children, I'm trying to think, Zabar's children, like all of these people who were part of the fabric of American culture. Mm-hmm. So it was normalized for all of us. We were just kids. Who our parents were was not like a thing. And it didn't come up. Like, it wasn't a part of what was happening in my dynamics as a kid. I started to realize it and have really felt the impact of it later in my life. But there were a couple of indicators that shit was weird. Like,
hit me.
When you would go with your mom to work and leave, and there would be throngs of people banging on the outside of the car, and like security would have to escort us with police to wherever we went. And, you know, like things like that were, you know, clearly, like, I'm not a dummy. Like, I was like, well, this can't be normal. Like, this is not a normal thing. Mm-hmm. But because of the groundedness of how we were raised, how I was, I say we too, like I'm a Rhonda Tracy Chudney.
Right.
So because of how we were raised, that the magnitude of that didn't quite dawn on me until I was an adult and realized that I wouldn't even be doing what I was doing were it not for what my mom did and the way that she paved, you know, that, there were places and spaces that I would not be able to inhabit and certainly wouldn't have the confidence in inhabiting had it not been not only for the career of my mom, but also how I was raised. And so, you know, I don't know if that answers your question. And then the third thing you asked was, There was a third.
We never had a meta rabbit hole before.
Yeah. It was so on point still. Like, she stayed focused.
We had a, there was a third, but anyway, so it's jogged another thought for you.
All right. Well, okay. Can you, I always tried to imagine what it was like to grow up in Los Angeles or Hollywood, assuming that you grew up in
I grew up in New York.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
New York and Europe. So I was born here in LA. I went to the center and then we moved to New York so my mom could do the Wiz in 79. Okay. And we left and started school in New York in 79 and stayed there until seventh grade. And we moved to Paris and then Switzerland. So I did eighth and ninth grade in Europe, which are pivotal years.
Right.
And then moved back to the East Coast and then went to Brown.
Oh, you got so a couple of languages then, maybe.
Oui, je parle français. Oui, je parle français.
Oh.
Okay, so you
I just forgot all my French in that moment.
On that
I
Kanye
just,
West video.
Oui, la toilette.
Oui, oui, la toilette. I have lost most of my vocabulary, but I have a strong French accent that can, you know, get me by. And I can speak English with a French accent like nobody's business. And then you have no idea because you don't know that I speak English or French. It doesn't matter because the people, they wonder. I don't know how you say in English because the people, they wonder all the time, you know,
Wait, I'm sorry, Amir.
This sounds traumatic to me.
Tracy, do you write?
I write.
So let me, it's funny because I was just thinking I know you've done improv. I seen you sketch comedy with the Lyricist Lounge. Of course, you're a funny lady. How come, and I know you're a fan of stand-up. Have you ever thought of like just doing
I've not done stand-up, but I have to tell you, I mean, I'm 48 years old. Am I 48? I'm 48.
Okay.
And I'm going through the beginning of some changes, some perimenopause.
Yes.
And I've got to tell you that I want to do stand-up on this shit.
Yes. Because
did you see the that 2 second pool video I posted?
Yes.
Okay.
And
I thought
I'm mad it was 2 seconds.
Under there,
sorry.
Perimenopausal.
I heard about that pool video. It's funny. I don't think
it's 2 seconds. It's 2 seconds. Nothing happens in that video.
Tracy, it don't matter. You was in a bathing suit. That's what I heard. That's all I heard.
In a pool. I was in a bathing suit in a pool. I mean, I you know, I have a like. I wasn't me in a bathing suit in the kitchen. Actually in the pool.
Yeah. I was like, why is this 2 seconds?
You should do that because a female comedian told me that females shouldn't talk about female issues. So please do that.
Why?
That was.
I wish more people would talk about it.
Me too.
I mean, I don't know about you, but some of the sexiest and most admirable women that I look at are my age and older.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what's happening. And
happening, how it happens, you know.
And what it is. And yeah. Like, it should be demystified. And I don't think it should be scary to men either. I think it's certainly not the end of my life. I am not being pushed out on a canoe out into nowhere. I'll tell you that right now. I, as I said before, am a liberated woman. I am out here living my life in all of its fullness.
Well, yeah.
And I think we should talk about it in that way. So that we let go of the stigma. It's the same thing like on Blackish when we did that episode on postpartum depression.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we not talking about these things?
Mm-hmm.
When you're siloed off by yourself, that's when you feel terminally unique and you don't think that you can, you know, it's just you that's in that situation. Nuh-uh, we're all doing it. And by the way, men have their own version of what's happening at this age as their hormones are shifting and changing.
Yeah.
Hey, well, yeah, I was about to say, Will set it off. Yesterday, you know, even though this is coming on way later.
Oh my God, that was so charming and lovely that he did that.
That was my favorite post. Yes.
It was so lovely, but I also have to say, like, so many friends and me have texted. I did a video on that on Instagram too, of people saying, you know, I've gained so much weight. Good, bravo, thank your body. You just made it through a pandemic. What else were you supposed to do? And I'm sorry, but that layer of softness.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome it, because the shit was hard and scary and sharp out there.
And everybody ain't make it.
Mm-hmm. No, you know, and so and our joy and spontaneity was all funneled into very few spaces, most of which involved food and drink. So I don't know what y'all thought was going to happen.
And some edibles and some smoke for you.
Well, I've never done that, but you know,
Don't worry, it's okay. I'm a
okay.
You never, did no tree.
Okay,
Tracee Ellis Ross. You never had no tree at all.
No, and my friends know I call it the devil's lettuce.
How did they let you in the lyricist's lounge? I don't know.
It can happen. I'm a late bloomer too, Trace.
That is
don't
true.
Worry. Yeah. I will guide you through this.
Yeah.
I've been saying, I have so many stories about me thinking I'm going to walk that way. And
wait till 50. Just go ahead and wait till 50. Go ahead.
Okay. Maybe it'll be my 50th birthday. You can send me a package.
I'll leave the lighter one for you. Trust me.
Okay.
I got you. Okay. So I always wanted to know, as far as your growing up is concerned, in that you were paired with other kids that were sort of in the same position as you.
Mm-hmm.
At any point, did you ever have to adjust in a world in which people weren't of that sort of cut from that same cloth, where you had to deal with everyday people? Like, mm-hmm. at what point were you?
Yeah, every day in life. I mean, first of all, the way I was raised again is everybody is a person. I am one of people.
Right.
I was not raised to think I was better than anybody. I had certain different opportunities and experiences than other people, but I was always taught to connect on the places that we are the same. Mm. We've all got blood running through our veins, and we all have feelings, and most of us are getting up every day trying to do our best and work our hardest and, mm-hmm. and sort of make at least our lives work and function properly. So I also come, I don't know if I was taught this, if I came up with this, if, you know, but to sort of put my humanness as the front runner of who I am, and first of all, I didn't do that. My mom did all those things.
Yeah.
I didn't do those things.
Did she keep you around like a couple of Detroit cousins just to make sure that y'all knew?
I went to Detroit every summer.
Okay.
And
that's how you do it.
Yeah, on a pallet on the floor at Aunt Bobby's house.
Yes.
Up the street from Grandmommy. And Aunt Bobby sat me between her legs and did my hair with that goody comb and tried to kill my scalp. and, you know, my grandma lined us up outside the fancy bathroom downstairs and put all the cousins and put mayonnaise in our hair laid on the kitchen sink, put our head in the sink, and then filled our hair with mayonnaise. You had to walk around smelling like a sandwich forever to condition
tasty.
Your hair. I mean, all of our cousins and boys and girls. It wasn't just the girls, like the boys and girls. We all got lined up. Stephen, Monica, Kevin. We all just lined up.
We see that in Rainbow. That is so beautiful. That's dope. It's funny. Just layers.
So, that's what I'm saying. Like, we weren't sheltered to be up in some crystal palace somewhere.
Okay.
Although we lived, you know, in a hotel. And I got driven to work in a Rolls Royce, to school in a Rolls Royce every day with a driver by the name of Arthur. But that's a side story.
As you do.
So
these things also did happen. I'm not saying they didn't, but.
Wow, that's amazing.
I spent Christmas at St. Moritz, but then we were in Detroit in the summer, so there you go.
Even it out.
Did you? I know that singing, at least when I first met you in the early aughts, singing was always a big passion of yours. With a household like yours and an environment like you grew up in, how easy was it for you to express the desire to want to do something in the arts or not be shy about it? Like, were
Gary.
You?
My mother supported us in finding our version of expression in whatever that looked like. But, you know.
Are you the only singing Ross?
No.
Rhonda.
No, Rhonda's a singer. Evan's a singer.
I forgot your brother was Evan Ross. Damn.
That's okay. I'm the last to the party.
Okay.
And it's so funny because I remember, I can't remember how many years ago it was, but my mom was in Vegas and on stage and she was like, you know, my children sing, blah, 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 whatever. And I want to bring someone up to sing with me. And I'm like standing there like, go ahead, Evan, go ahead, you know, whatever. And she said my name. And I was like, wait, what's happening right now? I was like, this is not my thing. I'm the funny one. What are we doing? What's happening? And she made me sing on stage. And it was so hilarious because if you watch the video, you see my mom turn into my mom. And
remember this.
Oh, no. Did I just
put Tracy, put my baby in a position that she didn't want to be in inadvertently. Like, did I make her, put her, you know, too exposed on something that makes her shy? And she sort of, she got this tone in her voice that was such my mom's tone of, okay, everybody be quiet because this is important. Like, be quiet. We need to support this moment. Be quiet.
Are you speaking of the infamous, when she puts people on the spot to sing Reach Out and Touch?
No, she put me on stage and had me sing.
Oh,
this
to sing
Billy,
a real song? Oh,
like Billie nice. Holiday. Like,
oh.
Like, oh, damn.
Like, Lady Sings the Blues.
She knows I sing that around the house.
Oh.
And she was like, go ahead. Because every time, I mean, I sang in high school and whatever. And every time I sang, when I was 22, my mom said to me, all right, Tracy, it's time. And I was like, it's time for what? She's like, it's time for you to record an album. And I was like, hell no. No, 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 no. I'm going to go the other way. Like, nope, we're going to make people laugh and we're just going to keep them at arm's length and that'll be good.
Okay, but why? Okay. In hindsight, why do you think that was your decision?
For a lot of reasons. I think unconsciously, the idea of being compared to my mom was just too much to think of. I had also seen children of be obliterated in the press, mm-hmm. just right. shredded. And you think back to that time and being the child of, or any of those things, that was not cool then. Mm-hmm. That was not something, that was also Greasy. The time when you didn't move from TV to movies, when you didn't move from being a host to an actor, like everything was very pigeonholed. And there mm-hmm. certainly wasn't this spirit of, oh, you're Diana Ross's child. Maybe you want to say, no, not at all. And I look like my mom. And the truth is I sound kind of like her. So, you know, as soon as you put a sparkly dress on me, I mean, I've seen it now. I've won a Golden Globe. I've been I'm 48 years old. I'm not a child anymore. And mm-hmm. I still cannot do anything without my mom's name, like me being my mom's child. Yeah. Like it's, she's larger. She's an international
icon. She's an icon.
Let me interject. I definitely now feel as though, you know, to Diana Ross, it's like, yo, Tracy Ellis is your daughter. Like,
yeah,
you've definitely done something that is, I don't know if any person, maybe Janet overcoming who her brothers were mm-hmm. to be in her own right. But yeah, like
you've made your own name though.
You're when history books are written, like, you know, you have your own, and not even to compare, like, to, you know, like we can all
no,
have
because, well that was part of what I came to, Amir, and understood is like an adult mind can look at it that way, but a kid cannot. And so now I know, like, I'm not my mom.
Right.
Like, I'm not trying to be here. I'm not, like, never. That's not what's happening. But as a kid, you think, you know.
And you have something that's really super special. I was going to ask you, because your production company is named Joy Mills, but I'm assuming that you're aware that you have that superpower and that's why you named it that. Are you aware that, like, Tracy Ellis Ross is a joy bringer?
That like makes my heart very, very full.
I'm just trying to tell you the truth, sis.
I was born Tracy Joy Silverstein. That's my name. So
Lie yeah. face right now.
Yeah. So
because I'm like, well, what about Mr. Ellis? Okay, go ahead.
Sorry. Okay, so this is, and that was the third point.
Okay.
About my dad. So when I joined, so like many kids, so then I was Tracy Joy Ross Silverstein all through growing up. TJRS were my initials all through growing up. Mm-hmm. But then, like so many people, you drop this name, that name's too long. I was Tracy Joy Ross. You know what I mean? Drop mm-hmm. these names. It's too many names. So I became Tracy Joy Ross. And then when I joined SAG, there was another Tracy Ross.
Really?
In the union. Remember Tracy Ross? She was
the Brad model. Johnson. Star Search.
Star Search, the black model.
Star Search.
Yo,
yes.
I thought that was you.
Yeah.
Amir. I heard that name.
That, there you go.
I was like, she grew up. Wow.
You were so,
I didn't know you were my age. I thought, like, you know.
We don't all look alike. They look nothing alike.
No. I heard the name Tracy Ellis. I remember watching that Tracy Ross on Star Search.
She was a hero.
And then she thought, like, oh, that's Diana Ross's daughter. That's the one she talked about.
When I joined the union, there was another Tracy Ross. So they were like, do you want to be Tracy Joy Ross in the union? And I was like, yes, but everybody, like, I look like my mom and people know I'm my mom's child. And I'm so much a product of both of my parents. Like, I am my dad's child and I'm my mom's child. And I wanted him to have a stake. You know, it's so crazy because I talk so much about women and women of color, and particularly Black and brown women, that we historically have not had a stake in what we make. And even with our children, we give up our name. And so there's often this, you can't even follow our bloodline because of that. But we have been at the center of economic, cultural, political revolutions in this country. And we are often doing the work, but not centered in the prize from that work. And strangely enough, I was worried about my dad having a piece of what he made. And so I put Ellis in my name and I became Tracy Ellis Ross at the beginning of my career. And my first, you know, SAG card was Tracy Ellis Ross. And now, you know, my name goes up there and people go, I'm Bob Ellis's kid.
Oh, okay. What was the first major creative thing that you, at least for you, what was the first major creative thing that you did as far as doing television or commercials or?
Well, the first big thing I did was the Gap ad with my mom.
With your mom. Okay.
Yeah. And I remember it was on billboards and it was like a big wall in an airport I walked through and I was just like, oh my God. And I made $1,500 and I thought I had made, I was like, I'm rich. I was like, oh my God. I was like, that was so amazing. I can pay my own doctor's fees. I can just, I can make my own food. I was incredible.
A lot.
It was so much money. Yeah. I was like, I will never work again.
Like 1 month away.
I actually think it was $750. And then I think I made $1,500 on the first show I did. But, then the next thing was I did an Infinity commercial. So I was modeling with Wilhelmina Agency and I went in for a modeling like commercial job go-see. And at the place where they were doing it, they were like, the people that are doing the Infinity, oh, it was a secret deodorant ad I went in for. And there was a sign-in sheet next to it for Infinity car commercial. And whoever ran the commercial audition place was like, you should go in and try for the Infinity commercial. And I was like, oh, yes, of course, I'll try. So I went in and that was the job that Taft Hartley'd me into SAG, which is the job that will pay the money to get you into SAG. And yeah.
I'm laughing at Bill.
I just love the idea that Tracy Ellis Ross had Taft Hartley. I mean, I've done that and it just makes me laugh. That's okay. Continue, please.
I mean, doesn't
but also. Also, why are there not people with multiple names in SAG?
No.
Like, couldn't there be multiple Tracy? No, there's not. Really? No.
Vanessa Williams, remember? Vanessa Williams.
Vanessa
L. Williams.
Vanessa L. Williams,
Well, shit. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I just learned something. Again.
So I got Taft Hartley'd in. I did that commercial. And then, I don't know. I mean, it has not been a fast and easy road for me. I remember there was a movie called Mixing Nia that Karen Parsons from Fresh Prince.
Cosby Show. Yeah.
She ended up getting that movie and I've never been more devastated in my life.
Really?
I was like, I mean, I was sure, Amir, that this was going to launch me into the stratosphere of the Oscars. I was going to the Academy Awards with my $750 from my Gap ad. I was going to march my way into Hollywood and be received with open arms for a career that would last a lifetime. Didn't happen.
What is that process like? Yeah. Like your version of the Hollywood shuffle as far as callbacks, near misses. What did you audition for that you didn't get?
Oh my God. I don't even remember. I had a three ring binder, like one of those Whopper three ring binders of like every audition I had auditioned for.
Mm-hmm.
That I didn't get.
Oh, you keep all the receipts of everything?
I didn't get nothing.
Really?
Because
according to us, it's like Daddy's Girls and High Note and right? Like, I'm trying to think.
No. They're from the time that I did Far Harbor, that first movie I did with Jennifer Connelly and Marsha Gay Harden. Okay, so I did that. And then I did the show. And before that, I did the show The Dish on Lifetime. That was, because I'm a TV girl. I live in your TV and I'm a TV girl. It was like a magazine show about TV shows.
That's before like you were born, Laia.
What?
Nothing. He didn't say nothing. Mm-mm.
He says before you were
born. She said it first. Oh, that was before my period. And I'm like, come on, dude.
So, 1996. I started watching Lifetime.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. And then I got an agent and auditioned some more. And I didn't get many callbacks. And then they dropped me. And this is what they said. Yeah. It stuck with me for a really long time. Listen, Tracy, we're going to let you go because you come with all these bells and whistles, but then you get in the room and you just don't pop.
Ooh.
Wow.
Whoa.
In your golden gold face, bitch.
But you know what? It was a turning point for me.
That's crazy.
Ooh. I could not get out of there without those, you know, those tears that sit there.
Oh, you almost start to cry. Like, the little.
And your throat hurt.
Because you're trying so hard to
hold the tears in.
And I felt like, you know, those office chairs with the wheels on the bottom of them. Mm, I felt like my heart had come out and it was like stuck underneath the wheel. And she kept moving the chair and it was just getting all tangled in there. My heart, and then there was blood and stuff, and then the tears, and I couldn't get out fast enough. But I made a decision at that point. I remember calling my sister. I called her out. I was like, I don't pop. I'm a no popper.
You better do that stand up.
At any point, did you ever consider dropping the Ross from your name?
It was
maybe
too late.
The thought that, like, okay, maybe they're holding that against me, like my lineage. And
well, you know, I used to say that people were like, well, doesn't being Diana Ross's daughter open doors for you? And I was like, no, what it does is it unlocks the door, and then people sit on the other side like this going, how's she going to walk in?
Oh,
they're like, okay, show us what. But I don't think that had anything to do with it. I think I sucked. I think I didn't know how to bring the person that I was inside myself and in the privacy of my home out into the world. Mm-hmm. And I needed that hit in order to ask myself, did I have the courage to do what it took to bring that person out? Or did I just want to go back into my hole and sort of live privately as I chose, you know?
Do you think Girlfriends is where you learn to kind of be that person?
No, I learned before Girlfriends. It's the reason I got Girlfriends.
Actually, okay. Yeah. Am I assuming, well, I'm assuming that I first saw you as an adult in Lyricist Lounge.
Yeah.
So how did that come to be?
Yeah, it was so good. Lyricist Lounge. Okay, so there was a coming out and turning point in my journey towards courageousness. Mm-hmm. I don't remember when because I'm bad at timelines, but I had been dropped by my agents. I moved to LA, and one of the things I did was every person that I met that helped me or offered me some information, I would write them a thank you note. And if they said you should meet so-and-so, I would say, can you call them for me? And I would constantly do that. And that's how my career started. So like Marsha Gay Harden said, you should meet my agents. And I was like, please. And I met her agents and they were like, we can't represent you, but you should meet so-and-so. And I was like, thank you so much. I would write a handwritten thank you note and then they would call the person and then I would go meet them. And that's just how my career started. And I booked a movie of the week, an NBC movie of the week, and then Lyricist Lounge came up, and I wanted that show so badly. And somewhere after the movie of the week, as you guys can hear, I do a lot of different voices and characters. Mm-hmm. And I love dressing up. I love clothes. I love playing dress up. So my closet is my happy place, and I go in there, and sometimes I make a really good outfit, and sometimes an outfit turns into a character. And my mom had, my mom had given a Hi8 video camera one Christmas. So I set it up in my kitchen and I stayed up until 3 o'clock in the morning and I played dress up and I made a video of all of these characters that I had been telling stories as for years. And I called it my holiday. It was my holiday gift. And I sent it out to anybody that wouldn't think I was trying to get a job. I sent it out with a note that said, I am sharing joy with you this holiday season. This is my version. And it was me, like I was, it's like a crazy person. And then it said, no judgment, happy holidays. I did like an impromptu Broadway song. Madame Iver was on there, Calliope Champignon, like all of these characters that still exist. And my agents ended up seeing it after the holidays and sent it to the producers of Lyricist Lounge. I got an audition for Lyricist Lounge, but they did not cast me. They cast Sarah Jones.
Oh.
Sarah Jones. Whoa. Sarah Jones had a values conflict with the subject matter of the show. She felt that some of the sketches, it didn't work for her. So she left. And they brought me in.
Wow.
Man.
That is crazy. Does Sarah know that story?
Yeah. And Sarah and I, for years, we were had never met. And it was like a whole thing. And then she and I came back together and met each other at the White House with the Obamas for Mrs. Obama's first mentoring weekend. We were walking to the White House together. We came down in the elevator, walked to the White House together. And we were like, can you believe this shit?
That's beautiful circle. That's a beautiful circle.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Because I thought she hated me for all those years. I was like, she left because she couldn't do it. And then I took it. And you know, it was a joy for me. I had a ball doing it. And everybody has a different compass on how they feel connected to material. And it didn't work for her. And I had no judgment of that. But it changed my career. And then the interesting story is that Lyricist Lounge left us hanging. We didn't know if we were picked up or not. It had been ages. We had no idea what was happening. And I auditioned for Girlfriends. And we had a window. They wanted me for Joan. And we had a window of like 3 days that if we couldn't get the sign off and the approval by the head of MTV, they would have to move to their second choice for Joan Clayton.
Please tell me. Do you know?
And the head of MTV was on vacation in Italy, and we couldn't get a hold of him. And I remember just laying on my bed, like frozen for hours, like for 12 hours, just waiting to hear if I was going to get this role that was going to change my life. And it worked out in my favor, but I didn't know.
Apparently so.
Wow.
Having entered what you did at MTV, at any point were you interested in sort of honing your skill at, say, like Second City in Chicago or Upright Citizens Brigade or any of those like improv?
You know what's so funny? As you were talking, I thought you were going to say, did you ever cross your mind to hone your skills as a rapper?
Well, that part
that too. That part too, for real.
Really? No, that did not cross my mind. I was so bad at that that I was in that sketch with Mos Def and Master Fool, and they had to, I mean, because, you know, sometimes I get the 1-3 really fast, and they were like, no. And so they had to coach me on when to come in. No, I didn't. I had been at, what is it called out here? The improv.
Right. Not the
comedy store.
Groundlings.
Is that what
it's called? Yeah. So I was in an improv troupe in college at Brown, and strangely enough, with Marty Belafsky, who was also on Lyricist Lounge.
Okay.
And I loved improv, and then I went to Groundlings, and they wouldn't move me from the one level to level two because they said I was too shticky and I wasn't funny enough.
Oh, wow.
Wait, so what? I told Groundlings, I said, you know what, Groundlings? Bye.
They kind of Uji. They Uji Amir. They like the Uji of the improv.
Well, like, either way, I was like, I was told to go where the love is, and I do not feel the love here.
Facts.
And then I booked Lyra's Lounge. So no, I didn't think of that at all. Mostly because I thought I was gonna stick in sketch comedy after Lyra's Lounge, but because of Girlfriends, which I thought was going to happen later in my life, I was living out the Lucy fantasy for me. So Lyra's Lounge was my Carol Burnett fantasy and dream. And then Girlfriends was my Lucy foray.
So what
Do you think my wife, she loves you. She watches Girlfriends on Netflix like all the time. She was curious to know, what stories did y'all leave on the table for Girlfriends? And like when that ended, what was that like for you?
It was horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Devastating. It was really hard when Jill left, and that also changed storylines. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it was just such a hard adjustment. And then when the show ended, you know, the last episode we shot, I directed, and it was during the strike, so we didn't even We didn't even have our family together. The producers weren't there. Mara wasn't there. So it was such a strange, odd end. We
was
never
that
had
the courthouse. It was like a location shot too, right?
No, that's what feels like it was the end. That was not the end. That was the end of the season with Tony.
Oh, that's right. And then he came back with.
And
then
we had two more after that.
So what did it feel like when you got the call from ABC that y'all were going to be bringing the girls to Black-ish?
Oh no, that's not how that went.
Okay, what did it feel like when you told ABC that
the
we need to bring?
The producer said, we have, so Courtney came to me and said, we have an idea, what do you think? And I said, this is the best idea ever. But before, I said, tell me when it's an actual green light that you guys feel like it can actually happen. And then let me call the girls first and find out if they're interested and comfortable. I don't want to make this a thing until I know if they want to do this. So I called each of them individually, even though we're on a group thread, but I wanted to call each of them individually so that no one felt pressured by somebody else or, you know, so that everybody just felt comfortable to answer. And I said, you don't have to answer me now. Like, it was an immediate yes for everybody. But by the way, everybody at Black-ish was like, what is going on? Like,
how much is the love? Was it?
I just got launched into another world. Like, and you know, some people on our crew have no idea what Girlfriends was. They were like, I don't understand what's happening. Like, we've never seen Tracy like this. I don't know what's going on. Right. But we did not stop talking. It was as if we were right back on Girl. It was so delicious.
That's
it was
dope,
so good. We had so much fun.
And the storyline that you made around, that y'all created around it was really dope.
It was really good.
Consistently. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So good.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. 'Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
In the 1980s, Frank Farian was riding high as a successful German music producer, but he was bored.
German pop was formulaic, dull, and oh so white. Frank had bigger dreams, American dreams. He wanted to create the kind of music that would rival larger-than-life artists like Michael Jackson or Run DMC.
So he assembled a hip-hop duo, two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? One very important element was missing, but Frank knew just how to fix that.
Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's biggest controversies. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when their adoring fans learned about the infamous lip-syncing, their downfall was swift and brutal. With exclusive interviews from frontman Fab Morvan and his producers Frank Farian and Ingrid Segui, this podcast takes a fresh look at the exploitation of two young Black artists.
Follow Blame It on the Fame wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus.
ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
My niece wants to know. Because we have all like Alice Ross.
We get it. Fonte,
listen, you already know. When they saw her name was on our QLS calendar, they was just like, my text was blowing up. Everybody wanted to know. So I'm trying to answer my family's questions. So my niece wants to know, how do you navigate the LA dating scene?
Oh, girl, please. Thank you, Niecy Poo. Because I live in LA too. What you mean?
I don't know.
Or do you even care? Yeah, she just.
I mean, well, the beauty of it is it's not an LA dating scene. The world is so small now that, you know, there was no dating scene during the pandemic.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard, but I think Niecy's asking from the perspective of it's hard for a black woman to date in LA, but maybe I'm just tripping. I don't know.
I think dating is hard no matter who you are, where you are, and if you're a man or a woman. I think there's good men out there.
That wasn't the argument. It was just that are they around and available? That's what.
Oh, I don't know if they are. Yeah. I don't know that they are. I don't know. I don't have major sort of theories and beliefs and I don't have any answers. What I know is that someone's going to either make my life better or I'm going to keep rolling with this wonderful life that I've built for myself. You know,
I found my happiness at 50. So, I mean,
oh my God. Speaking of which, Amir, you said at 50, you found your life. How old are you now?
50.
Right. Okay. So, with the way you said it, I was like, what are you, 60? Like, what's happening? Nah.
You just found this shit last week.
I'm just saying that, and a few other things.
Flowers, baby, flowers.
Around like 47, 48, I was just like, maybe I'm just going to be a serial bachelor for life and, you know, whatever. And then, you know, as with all of us with the pandemic, like this pivot happens and you get a new, either heed to the calling or you succumb to the inside of your voice. And no, it's possible to have a turnaround, you know, for you.
Most men get their sense at 50, so that's
first of all. That's
because we done made our money.
But well, some of it's that. that's hilarious.
No, it's also about just being open.
But wait, the thing that's so interesting, Amir, you just said the sound inside my voice. Is that what you said? That's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard.
Well, just inside my head. You know, oftentimes we hear the voice inside of our head says the most mean shit to us all the time. We say stuff, we say shit to ourselves. Yeah, we say shit to ourselves that, you know, we wouldn't allow anyone to say to us. And oftentimes we listen to that voice more than anything. So,
introspective, Amir, my favorite one.
You gotta understand, Tracy, this is about a year and a half new, baby. So we
are you serious?
We need you to think that
we have 8 years of none of this.
Lifetime.
None of this. This is crystals.
I'm not Umar Johnson.
There's a beautiful woman named Grace involved.
But this is, look at him rolling his eyes. Well, something's happened, Amir. So just
look, this episode's not about me. We only got 15 minutes with her. I told you, we didn't even get the blackest shot.
Okay. So no, that's okay. Okay, so let me just say that I think there's really good men out there, and I don't know how to navigate any dating scene. Dating is just awkward and weird, and it's even more awkward when you like being in your house.
Say that shit, yes.
And you know, you get to a certain age where you're like, I don't want to do that. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to go there. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm happier right here on my couch. So.
Facts.
Yeah. One thing I will say about you, Tracy, like I've always admired, you seem for your celebrity and the status and all things you've done, you are like one of the most regular celebrities. Like, and I mean, in the best way possible. In the sweetest way possible. You were just, you know, you just always just exude just kind of just a realness about you. And I was just curious to know, how do you maintain that in Hollywood? How do you keep your identity?
She stays on the couch.
I think it's that my identity is not wrapped up in what I do. It's who I am and how I show up for my friends and how they show up for me and the kind of daughter and sister I am. Like, that's where, that's what has meaning to me, how I am of service in the world, particularly to those I love, and even more importantly, to those I don't know. And so I, that's what right sizes my life. And I really like being a people among people. It's my humanity is my favorite part. It's also the most uncomfortable part of me. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I'm like, ah, could I stop being such a human being? You know what I mean? Like, why,
you have a
why
did
I
heart.
Know better and not do better? What, you know, like, I wake up every day trying to do my best. Why did this day suck so bad? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how did that happen? Like, I didn't try to go left, but somehow I am left. So
part
I don't
of human
know.
Being.
I also think I'm not really invested in, I don't know. I mean, look, I love sparkly things. I love pretty clothes. I love shoes. I love great restaurants, but I'm also not, my compass is not money. My compass is not fame. It's having an opportunity to do the things that I love and to connect with people and to make people laugh and to make people feel comfortable in their own skin. You know, I know what it feels like for me when I'm around people that I leave and I'm like, oh, I just feel so much like myself around them. Not like I want to be them, but like, I just feel so safe and like myself around them. And I hope that I can bring that to the world and to other people. And so maybe that keeps it right size, but I don't know. I don't know.
Are there, okay, now that you have the platform and the position that you do have, what's on your bucket list as far as things that you really want to do, cross off and sort of manifest and bring out there that maybe 10 years ago you weren't able to develop?
I think a lot of those things are in process right now. And I'm not one of those people, like, you're not going to see me post about the idea of doing something. You're going to see me post when it's happening. It was a 10-year dream. It took me 10 years to launch that company. Mm-hmm. And I love being a CEO. I love being a founder of a company. I love using my mind in that way. The access that it has given me to be able to sit in boardrooms and talk to people who don't usually get somebody who's not afraid to say, yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, actually, that's not effective. Actually, that's actually detrimental to the people you say you're helping. I'm sorry. It's not called D&I. It's diversity, equity, and inclusion. I'm sorry, gatekeeper, sir. If you don't make changes, there's never going to be fundamental change. You know, I didn't know that so much of what so many things that I was experiencing that caused frustration and disappointment had to do with the systemic problems that were happening in the world. I took them personally, you know? And so when you realize it, then you're like, oh, well, what can I do to help make this change? So Pattern has given me access not only to a particular and different kind of platform, but also a courage inside me to not be a person that gets plugged in places, but actually can create more real estate, not just for me, but for others, to help other people find how to have their own equity in what they make. So I have a production deal with ABC Signature, which is across all their platforms, Hulu, FX, all of their platforms. I have 5 different projects in development. There's expansion that I want to happen that is in process with Pattern. So those things and those parts of my dreams, like, I want to be a producer. I love being a producer. And that is happening. I really would like to do more movies. I want to kick some ass in a movie. I really would like to, like,
hell yeah,
literally kick ass.
Like, you know, those when they spin around and then they chop under the legs and the person falls and then they go, like, I would really like to do that in a movie in some very strong and powerful way. I would like to be, to do a love story. I would like to be a love interest in a movie as a sexy grown ass woman, and not have to be like the 22-year-old with the 50-year-old man. Yeah. Like, maybe I'm the 50-year-old with the 22-year-old man. How you doing?
Me and the rest of your fans are sitting here like, how come we ain't seen seen this? Why has this not happened? What is,
you know what I mean? I want to see a whole bunch of Black women on screen being as incredible as we are and not have to constantly be talking about the fact that we're Black, but just be in our experience. I want to see those stories. I want to be a part of making those happen, and I want to be involved in them. So there's lots of those things.
You got to drop the word wanna and just manifest
it. I'm gonna.
That's my last words of wisdom with
manifest.
No, Shaman Love. Good words of wisdom. And, I have to say I manifest quickly, so I just got to be specific about that language. Okay,
it will happen. All right. We got 3 minutes left. 3 minutes left.
We do.
Manifest 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah, we do. 3 minutes.
Yeah, we got 3 minutes left, and I'm skipping.
Oh, Blackish, you didn't
No, I'm skipping Blackish. Okay. Y'all watch Black. I actually want to go to Mixtus.
Yes.
How much of your life, and shout out to
Angela,
our friend Angela Nissel.
Our family.
Yes.
Yes. How much of your life, I know that Mixtus is, quote, a show about your character's life, but how much input do you have in it as far as the direction that it
goes? I have a lot of input, but it is not my life. It's Bo Johnson's life. But the mixed experience, I love that we're able to tell that story and to tell it through the 80s, which is so strange to think of the divisiveness that the 80s held and how similar it is to what we're living in now.
Yes.
With a couple of different overlays. But we can, what time, 6, 17, 20, we've got 3 minutes. What if we have 8 minutes?
Okay.
We got 8 minutes.
Oh, okay. So that being said, because we didn't ask her the question when we had Mariah here, did you have anything to do with getting Mariah to sing that thing? Because that didn't seem easy. The theme song, Mr.
No, that was Kenya.
Okay. Kenya. Okay. Okay.
That was Kenya. And that was she was so excited to do that. She was so excited.
So perfect.
Excited enough to have that big ass credit at the beginning.
Yeah, that's right in there. I've never seen that before in my life.
Yeah, I still tease her to that to this day. She's like, I don't know if that happens. I'm like, I know your people.
She is hilarious. She also is a really big texter, that one.
I've not stopped talking to Mariah since our interview that night. So,
yeah. But by the way, Mariah is also really regular in some ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, as much as
she can be.
Yeah, shout
out to the homie. I'm only playing. Yes.
Mariah, no, she's one. Look, anyway, that was a really wonderful experience. And I got to know Mariah in a way that I did not before. And it's not that I had any negative idea of Mariah, but I didn't know Mariah. Do you know what I mean? And she's so lovely.
Yeah. lovely. Her mixed experience is ill, too, after reading the book and whatnot.
I have not read her book.
Oh, Tracy.
Trace, get the audiobook.
I will get the audiobook, and literally, it's on my list. It's so stupid that I have it.
If you're a long driver or whatever, like, her storytelling is
And my friend Michaela wrote that with her.
Power to the people, because people got the power.
Yeah, she is one of my faves. So, but yeah, Mixtus, my first producing experience, and really love being in that position to be able to craft a story before a script is written, to actually to be a part of that, to be a part of casting. All of that I find really exciting, and sort of the execution of something. You know, Mixtus was a little different because it was, it was the full expression of something that had already existed and sort of been given life. Mm-hmm. But the other projects that I'm developing, from optioning a book, and that, like, it's just so exciting. That process is so exciting.
Now I do want to go back to Blackish.
Yeah.
There's so many things I want to ask about that show, but probably for me, as such a fan of that show, whose idea was it for you guys to have sort of the dark period of your marriage where I didn't see that coming? And again, like, When I watch these shows, I kind of do a binge style, so it wasn't like I even had a warning from ABC, like
a special ABC, Meredith Baxter Burney episode of Blackish,
like that sort of thing. Do you remember when they used to do that? A very special,
different strokes.
Right.
This one where Dudley got.
Yeah, take my shirt off. He made me take my shirt off.
So, yeah, I didn't see that coming, and I was like, wow, this is really bold, because I mean, I'm trying to say this as diplomatic as I can.
We only got three.
The Huxtables were always my first family, and now it's like the Johnsons are about to overshadow that mm-hmm. and really be, you know, because you guys cover so many subjects that were never ever on the Cosby Show.
But if not for the Cosbys, there wouldn't be the Johnsons. But go ahead. Yes,
and mm-hmm. I'm not disparaging. But okay. Yeah, I didn't see that coming. Like, whose idea was it to really just bring it down to that level?
Kenya Barris and Anthony and I were not happy.
Wow.
Y'all played it like you was happy.
Well, it took a minute. I was like, why are we doing this? What is this? Why are we doing this? Like, I was like, I don't understand. This feels like the end of the show. It was so confusing. It was, you know, Kenya, that was a bold risk on his part. And this is why Kenya is Kenya. You know what I mean? Like, he really, I don't know where it came from. You can ask him all those questions. But once we dove in, and, you know, I directed the first of those two episodes.
Okay.
That was hard because I was playing a version of Bo that I had never played before. Like, right. Usually the show is anchored in Dre and Bo liking and loving each other.
Right.
Like, and it's also anchored in me and Anthony. Like, we have a respect and a safety with each other that is the core of the show. Like, that's what we do. You know, he and I, there are places that I can fly to because of Anthony and that he can fly to because of me that I've never experienced in my creative career. It's so much fun. It is so much fun dancing and playing ping pong with Anthony. I can't even tell you. And so that was hard. I didn't like fighting with him. I didn't like it.
Yeah, you know, even the film stock that you guys used, like, that kind of film stock where I was like,
where
oh,
went
wait.
In and out of that. Yeah.
Someone's about to die here. Or, yeah.
I know. It was, and then my dad did die. It was a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, poor Bo Bridges, man.
And that was, and by the way, and then we went and shot a funny scene after that. I was like, are y'all crazy? I don't know. I'm so proud of what we do on the show. I think back to when Black-ish launched and how freaked out everybody was about the name. Mm-hmm. And if you think back to the landscape of
everybody,
television.
Everybody, it was just one person. And we know that person was.
No, it was.
No. Well, he started it.
He started, but a lot of people were upset about it. But they didn't know what the show was yet. And I understood that. And the truth is, it's a perfect name for what our show is. And what we deconstruct and pull apart and unpack. And but if you think of what the landscape of television was at that moment and what we opened up in terms of giving metrics to the ability for Black stories about a Black family that doesn't happen to be Black but is Black being successful and identifiable for everybody, we changed the landscape of television. At
you
that
did
point.
An episode on Juneteenth that was not in the mainstream of conversation before
and let me tell you
y'all
something.
Did that.
The amount of people that have said to me, I didn't know what white people that have said I didn't know what Juneteenth was before Black-ish aired that episode is a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people who didn't know. And I always say to people, like, you come by that honestly. Like, a lot of people didn't know because nobody was telling anybody.
Well, right. Black is a good little small education to some layers of Black people. And if that's, that's funny, if you watch and you don't know us, you get to know a little bit. That's
a little bit. Just a little piece. It doesn't do something. Everything. It's 22 minutes. And you get to see it through the lens of this family. But, and I mean, you know, it's been a treat, a real treat. We don't talk enough about the frame that needs to be present to hold the narrative of our cultural value, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't mean of Black-ish, I mean of the stories, Black stories, you know, and how so many people reap the cultural benefit, but we don't get the credit for the work done and the stories told. And so, I don't know, I'm so grateful. The show has been such a blessing and so much fun. I mean, it's been 7 years, knock on wood, but you know, Anthony and I haven't gotten into nothing.
Nope. And y'all created.
So they didn't bring you guys the cake yet, saying goodbye and another
no,
season.
No, but I mean, like, Anthony and I had, like, to work that closely with someone as much as I mean, we work 14-hour days, like, it's just the longest ever, you know. And the way we work together,
it's just been such a such a joy. It's a joy.
It's a joy to watch.
It is.
Everybody. And y'all created the youngest executive producer ever.
She told us all back then when we asked, there was a panel we did first season and said, what do you want to be as you get older? And she said, a legend.
I seen it since the first episode, since the pilot. I
swear to God. And we were all like, well, okay then.
Marcy and Martin for president. Let's go.
Yeah, I'll be working for it soon.
Oh, man, our listeners will kill us if we forget this. The Kanye video. You have to tell us about shooting that. We got it.
Which one? Touch the Sky?
Which one? What about the ass? Don't forget the ass. Yeah, that was Touch the Sky.
I was even with the ass. I also did work. I've done two Kanye videos. Fifi LaBeouf was in Kanye in Workout Plan. That was crazy. We flew on helicopters into the Grand Canyon. Shit. And we shot in the Grand Canyon, me, Nia Long, and Pam Anderson. I was like, what is going on right now? And I remember because he was my neighbor and he was like, I have an idea. And I'm like, okay. And he told me the story of the video. And I was like, I don't understand. Why am I not the other character? He said, because her name is Nia Long. Right. I get it now. I'm my own best advocate. So like, I was just wondering why, like, I wasn't like, but whatever. And then we had so much fun doing that, though. That was insane. It was freezing.
I would have chose you, Tracy.
I think what about the hair and that? That was me. That was just me improvising like a crazy person.
Queen of improv.
What are you going to say? I said, don't worry about it, Kanye. Don't worry about it. Just turn the cameras on and tell me. Say the A word. Say action, and it's gonna come.
Were you always the family comedian?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Oh my God. Okay. My mom used to. She. My mom. So our dining room table. There were glass doors outside, and my mom, like, I would disrupt so much. I would have like the wiggles. That's what my grandma called it, the 12-year-old giggles, wiggles, and I just had so much energy. And I would really like to poke at my sister Rhonda to see if I could get her to laugh, but usually it made her really angry.
Right.
And so my mom would excuse me from the table. Why don't you go outside and get the wiggles out? So I would stand outside while my family is eating dinner. I would stand outside like
the wiggles out.
I'd be like, and then I would come back and sit down and she would say, have you gotten them all out? And I'd be like, I don't think so. And I would go back. My mom was very supportive of my large, large energy.
Thank you, Mom. We thank you.
We're wrapping up,
but I'm going to say this because my sister Rhonda, my mom was such a good mom, as I said, and my sister Rhonda and my siblings are such great parents. And when her son, Raif, is doing what I do, because she gave birth to a little me, when he's doing
that,
I'm like, what is going on back there? I can't even hear you. She says he's being creative.
Yeah. Saw him in that award show. He's hilarious. I love him. Yes. And he looks beautiful on the website.
Yeah. My son is being creative.
Yes. Yes.
Wait, this one quick question. And this is totally just random. Speaking of you and your relationship with your mom, was it you that influenced her to have LL Cool J on her special back in 87?
No.
That wasn't...
No. My mom is way cooler than I could have made her be.
Okay. Because I always wanted to know, like, we were like, what the hell is LL doing? This is like when Bigger and Duffer first came out.
Look, Amir, I don't believe you. We would have to see for ourselves.
Trust me, it's weird. No, this is when her Red Hot Rhythm and Blues album came out.
He knows all that. Well, you know everything, though.
Yeah, you know. Trace, I really thank you for making the time for us to do this.
Rhonda
Tracy Chutney. Yo, I was really about to say Rhonda Tracy Chutney. Thank you very much.
Rhonda Tracy Chudney said, you're so welcome. I adore you. And I'm so glad I finally got on here.
To our viewers out there, yes, viewers, to our listeners out there, yes, I try to turn this into a 5-hour Jimmy Jam episode. It didn't happen, so don't get mad at me.
Because Tracy Ellis Ross is booked and busy.
Yeah, yes. She got shit exactly. to do.
Well, that's can you tell your daddy that we still want to talk to him? No, I'm serious. We're still
no, I'm cool with Bob.
Will he talk to us? You think he would talk to us?
I think he'll talk to us.
He'll talk to anybody. He talks to you. If you're in the line at Starbucks, you're going to get the whole ear.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes. I cannot wait to have the Bob Ellis episode.
He's a cutie.
Bob no, thank Ellis you. Ain't no joke.
I appreciate it. Tracy, run to your appointment. Thank you very much. Yeah. And this is Questlove Supreme, y'all. We will see you next week. Next time. Bye.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonte. Make sure you keep up with us on Instagram at QLS and let us know what you think and who should be next to sit down with us. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. All right? Peace.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.